Welcome to Vallejo's Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast on Sunday, May 6th, 2018. The Reverend Wendy Camori Stager is preaching a sermon entitled The Gardener and the Carpenter. The New Testament readings are John chapter 12, verses 24 through 26, and John chapter 15, verses 9 through 17.
There's a book I've been reading called The Gardener and the Carpenter. It's a parenting book, actually, written by Allison Gopnik, who's a professor in Berkeley studying the science of child development. And it's the science of child development tells us about the relationship between parents and children. So, yes, I bought it because I'm in the middle of parenting. But I think I also bought it for the title. For in our household, we have a carpenter and a gardener. These are our favorite hobbies. And so, you know, we bought our house 20 months ago. And in the meantime, Mark has now a table saw and a bandsaw and a random orbital sander. Is that right? And a jigsaw and a shop vac, right? And he's set up in the garage. And in the last 20 months, I've changed the landscaping and said, we're going to take out trees and we're going to put mulch here. And I planted a vegetable garden and I'm out with my shovel and gloves. And they are different styles and types of work. Carpentry and woodworking takes planning, right? So a good woodworker is going to shape the material that you've bought into that final product that you have in mind. I think there's a bookcase that is still in mid-plan. And it takes precision. Measure twice, cut once. And so mistakes can be very, very frustrating and wasteful and costly. And then when you get to the end of a carpentry project, you can step back and you can assess the quality of your work. Is it square? How'd you do with the finish? Is the table sit level or does it rock a little bit from end to end? Did you miss a spot of sanding? And Allison Gopnik in this book on parenting starts to name that as a society, we take our carpentry metaphor and we tend to apply that to our parenting. So that parents in the year 2018 are worried that we're not producing the product that we are setting out to build. That our children are not doing well in school, but then we're also worried that we're pressuring them too much to be doing well in school, and that there's this certain achievement or outcome that we're working towards. So you think most children want their child to go to Harvard, right? And then make lots of money. Okay, but they're not all gonna turn out like that. Because in a carpentry model, right, the parents try to follow this plan and to learn all the techniques and the expertise that are going to get their child there, and then see the mistakes as being pretty costly and regrettable and permanent. And this carpentry metaphor then invites more and more supervision and planning and measuring and control. I'm seeing this style of parenting in my own extended family. For the sake of confidentiality, I'm going to call them Matt and Kate. So Matt's the dad, Kate's the now 19-year-old. And I've watched Matt over the years really trying to shape Kate into the daughter that he expected. So he's sort of pushing towards, oh, you're good at math. Great, so computer science. Okay, so then you need to take advanced math and you're on track and you'll take calculus by your senior year and, you know, you'll take this AP class and that. And granted, she was good at math, but also she really liked art. But still, right, Matt is like, you're not checking art books out of the library, right? What about this book on modern architecture? And he started editing what books she could take out of the library. And I was like, I don't like this. This doesn't look good, right? And eventually it got so contentious. I don't know if you have people like this in your extended family, where she was miserable. And then she got up and she left the house. And she actually hasn't been back. And now they're not talking to each other. And it's painful, right? It's really painful to see. And so when I look at this carpentry idea of parenting and fixing and constructing, right? It's not, I don't see it working well for human relationships. It's great for working with wood. I don't find it to be a great metaphor for working with human relationships, and neither does Gottnick. And so she redirects us towards a different metaphor that perhaps parenting is more like being a gardener. Because being in human relationships is more like planting and growing and nurturing than building a chair. Well, Jesus was a carpenter. Well, at least we say he was a carpenter. Now that I've been to the Holy Land and there's not a lot of wood there, I really do see Jesus more as a stone carver than a carpenter because there's just not wood. But anyway, I mean, he was somebody who was building things with his hands. But Jesus, the carpenter, uses an awful lot of gardening metaphors when he's talking about the gospel. We just looked at this text. I am the vine, you are the branches. There are other stories sprinkled throughout the gospel, right? The kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. Remember that one? Or the parable where the sower goes out to sow. And the text we read this morning, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies. Gardening metaphors are about life, right? The branch of the grapevine is dependent on the vine. The vine's dependent on the roots. We talked about all that last week a bit. And in today's scripture, it's the one that immediately follows the vine and the branches. And it's all about abiding in love. Abide. It's not a word I tend to use in day-to-day conversation, but it means staying with. It means being in. Notice there's not as much doing in a verb like abide as there is being. And so this text reminds us being is staying connected with Jesus. And abiding ends up fitting the vine of the branches because it's not a one-time action. Abiding is ongoing action, staying close. I know there's a grammatical term for that, the ing participle. Participle? Gerund. Gerund or a participle? But if it's ongoing action, it is a verb. It's a participle? Present participle? Present participle. There we go. So right, it's staying in, right? It's loving. It's abiding. And part of that abiding means it's not all about one individual. And Jesus himself demonstrates this because his love also includes sacrifice, self-sacrifice, laying down one's life for one's friends. It's what Jesus does on the cross. He lays down his life. But in laying down his life, he's like that grain of wheat. And his death and resurrection bears an abundance of harvest. Jesus allowed himself to go to the cross not out of duty but out of love and in laying down his life for us. This is what love looks like. And it's a model of love for loving one another. A love that is death to ego, death to self, but that gives life to love. That's what I wish for Matt and Kate. I wish, you know, you can't fix somebody else's life, right? But I wish that Matt would lay down his plans and his ego to let go of his determination that he's right and he knows how she's supposed to be. And to love Kate instead, rather than trying to fix her or construct her. I long for him to let go of this carpentry model of parenting and start gardening. Do you remember that the word kindergarten actually comes from the word child garden? And we send kids to nursery school, and the nursery is also where you can buy your little tiny plants that you're getting into your garden. What? oh, seminary is seeds, right? So we have the roots, no pun intended, right, of this idea of gardening and growing. And so I am pleased that Kate is now in a place where she's getting a little more garden loving. She's set up in her own, you know, rented room. And I'm watching her starting very slowly, like a young plant who needs some space to reach out and grow. And she's fragile and she needs some tending and caring. But she's starting to grow in her own direction. She's starting to look into art school. She's starting to recognize that she is loved. Allison Gotnick describes some of her own gardening like this. When we garden, we create a protected and nurturing space for plants to flourish. It takes hard labor, the sweat of our brows, with lots of exhausted digging and wallowing in manure. And as any gardener knows, our specific plans are always thwarted. Okay, I'm learning this in my house, right? I have clay soil, and I'm digging in the manure. And although I love large beefsteak tomatoes, I've also learned they're not going to grow on my hillside in Venetia. Darn it. But, oh my gosh, sunflowers? They didn't care about that hard soil and grew 8 feet high and reseeded for this year with volunteers. Going back to Gotnick, she writes, and yet the greatest compensation is that our greatest horticultural triumphs and joys come when the garden escapes our control. When the weedy white Queen Anne's lace unexpectedly shows up in just in the right place in front of the dark yew tree. When the forgotten daffodil travels to the other side of the garden and bursts out among blue forget-me-nots. When the grapevine that was supposed to stay demurely hitched to the arbor runs riot through the trees. In fact, there's a deeper sense in which such accidents are a hallmark of good gardening. There's no guarantee that any individual plant will become the tallest or the fairest or the most long blooming. A good gardener works to create fertile soil that will sustain the whole ecosystem. Unlike a good chair, a good garden is constantly changing. She concludes, so our job as parents is not to make a particular kind of child. Instead, our job is to provide a protected space of love, of safety, and stability in which children of many unpredictable kinds can flourish. That sounds like love. So Mark can have his wood shop, and I'll have my garden. Each of these hobbies have their place. But I would challenge you today, perhaps, where are you trying to be the carpenter to fix, to shape, to work towards an outcome, when being a gardener might be a different and better metaphor? Another way to ask that would be, what's a situation that you keep trying to fix that maybe just takes some of this abiding and loving and participling? And then also about us, right? Where's an area of ego that you may need to surrender or let go of, to bury in order to let something new emerge? What idea needs to die, but that in dying will produce more fruit? For Jesus says, I have loved you, abide in my love. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Thanks be to God for these words of love.
You have been listening to Community Presbyterian Church Sermon Podcast. To learn more about Community Presbyterian Church and its ministries, come visit us at 2800 Georgia Street in Vallejo, California, or visit our website, cpcvallejo.org. You can also email us at cpcvallejo@sbcglobal.net. Have a blessed day.